My name is Tom Boaz. I'm 61 years old. I grew up in Decatur. I currently live in St. Joseph, Illinois. I was a non-combative conscientious objector.
Can you, for someone who doesn't understand the draft or doesn't know what that means, can you explain what it meant to be a conscientious objector and kind of what the process was?
When I registered for the draft at 18, which we were required by law to do, I registered as a non-combative conscientious objector. That means that if I was drafted, I would enter into the military, but I would not carry any weapons or fire any weapons. Chances are I would have been put into medical or cook or latrine or some other non-combative nature.
What were your feelings on the draft at the time?
Didn't like it. Didn't think it was fair, but it was the law.
Why wasn't it fair?
Sorry, can you state the draft that you used the word draft?
I didn't think the draft was fair. I didn't like it. It was the law of the land, so I had to do it.
Why didn't you think the draft was fair?
I thought it primarily took... Well, the people that were drafted were primarily the high school, non-college educated people, primarily the poor people, economically, statistically wise, a larger majority of minorities, per the general statistical population. You didn't see the politicians' sons being drafted. You didn't see the rich kids being drafted or entering the military.
How did you develop these feelings about the draft at the time?
It came out over time. The primary reason is I was an exchange student. I lived in Germany for a year. By applying to become an exchange student, I learned more of the politics of the war, of the Vietnam War. I learned more of the politics of the draft. Also, being in Germany, I was there in 1971-72. I got to know not only German people my age, but also being an exchange student, I had the opportunity to become friends with people of other nationalities. And we were all basically the same. Spoke different languages, but we were all basically the same. And I determined at that point that I could never carry a gun.
Was there like a specific moment when you realized you would never carry a gun that you remember?
We had no guns in our household. My parents were pacifist, but never political about it. There was no specific moment when I decided this is what I was gonna be. It just kind of came over time, and I was reaching my 18th birthday. I knew I had a decision to make.
What does the word pacifism mean to you?
It's a good question. One who finds other ways of dealing with issues other than through physical confrontations. I always believe that one should try to talk it out, converse, get to know each side, and come to compromises.
Would you consider yourself a pacifist?
Yes, very much so.
Can you say that in a complete sentence for me?
Yes, I would consider myself a pacifist.
Do you think that means, or that does that mean you're against war?
Well, that's interesting. I am against war. No, being a pacifist doesn't mean necessarily you are against war, but I am. I think there's other alternatives. One of the issues with being a non-combative conscientious objector was that I realized that not everybody believes in those feelings. We do need a military. I don't think we should have been in Vietnam. There's other places since then I don't think we should have been. But we do need a military, primarily for defense purposes, I would wish. But even then, I could not have carried a gun.
What was it? You keep saying, I could not carry a gun. But, like, what did that mean? Like, what do you specifically mean? Like, what about a gun?
By not carrying a gun, I mean I could not shoot anybody. I couldn't shoot anything either, for that matter. We don't have a gun in the household. We don't want a gun. I've not shot in a gun since I was maybe 8, 10 years old at a camp. I just couldn't shoot anything. I couldn't take the life of anything like that.
Take me back to Germany when you first arrived. How was it different? Like, what was the atmosphere of Germany in 71?
It was very similar. Very similar to the United States at that point in time. There was still some construction going on after World War II. I did live in Nuremberg, Germany. The main part of Nuremberg was 90% destroyed by U.S. and British bombs. Hundreds of thousands of people were displaced. Thousands of people were killed by bombs, innocent people. Nuremberg was very high in the Nazi propaganda. And so that was one of the reasons it was targeted. It was also an industrial town, so that was one of the reasons it was targeted. But they went after the inner city also, which made no sense to me. I saw what the destruction of the war could be. And I just got to meet people, and very, very similar to me. And I just slowly came to the conclusion. But Germany at that point in time was similar to the United States, really.
Was Nuremberg, is that West Germany or East Germany?
Nuremberg is in West Germany, in the Bavaria region.
And then, as you said, you met people that were just like you. Is there anyone specifically that kind of like a German that sticks to your mind that like had an influence on you, any of your opinions?
No, not really. I was friends with various German people. They accepted me. One of my better friends was an exchange student who was in the United States in Alaska the year before. One reason we became friends also is because he could speak English better than I could speak German. So that was a way to become a friend.
Did you know any German veterans?
The people I lived with, the father was a prisoner of war in a United States prisoner of war camp. He spoke very good English. He became a translator. He was one of the few people over there who spoke American English and not English English.
Did he ever tell you about the war or talk about it?
Very few people, if any, talked about the war. They didn't want to talk about it is the impression I got. I feel like they were somewhat ashamed of it. And this is World War II, of course.
Tell me more about this family thing you talked about. How did you know that he was a POW in a U.S. camp? And what role did this father, this host father that you stayed with, did he play in the World War II?
I don't know what the host father role the host father played in the war. He didn't want to talk about it. He did tell me he was a POW and became a translator during this time period. And he spoke very, I won't say proper American English, but very good American English. He knew the colloquialisms. He knew slang, what you would expect Armed Forces people to speak. When I was there, he was the district manager of the Dunlop tire facility in Nuremberg.
And then going back to Michael, so how, what was your opinion on war before you went and met the Germans?
Before I went to Germany, I was really very non-political. I really didn't think much about it. Yes, I saw the news. Yes, it was terrible. Yes, I wanted no part of it. Yes, I didn't think we should be there, but I was really fairly non-political. I played a lot of sports in high school. You could pretty much call me a jock at that point in time.
All right, so then, so you get to Germany, you're in Germany, you're approaching your 18th birthday. Kind of like walk me through like what it was like having to turn 18 at that time period as a man, and also kind of what was going through your mind.
I had to go to the Munich consulate to apply for register for the draft. It was a scary time. It was a time of fairly good thought for me. I didn't know how my family was going to accept my decision. I had not talked to my parents about it. I didn't really have anybody to lean on to talk about it. So it was all my decision. The people I lived with didn't really understand what I was going through, nor did I try to describe it. So it was pretty much my own decision. And I wasn't 100% sure of what I was going to do until I got to the consulate and applied that way.
Walk me through, like, what was the process of registering as a CEO? What did you do?
Walk into the Munich consulate. Say I'm an American citizen, show my passport, say I'm here to register for the draft. They took me into another room, just an office, said, here are the paperwork, and I didn't do a whole lot. I just sat down and checked the box that said non-combative conscientious objector. Obviously name and phone number, or name and address and things like that, but didn't have to explain it to anybody and handed them the paperwork. No, not at all. It was just, let me find a box.
When did you know you were going to check the conscientious objector box?
Not sure. Probably a couple weeks to a month before that. Didn't have much time. I mean, that was before the internet, so I didn't have much much way to research it. Wasn't even sure if that was a possibility when I went in there, but that was my whole intent. And I had told them that was my intent before they had given me the paperwork.
So, you said it was a scary time, approaching your birthday. What were you scared of?
I was scared that I possibly could get drafted. It would be an interruption in life. If I was drafted and sent to Vietnam, I wanted nothing to do with Vietnam. I thought we shouldn't have been there to begin with. Don't know what I would have done if I was drafted. When I did come home, I did have a one-way ticket in my pocket for a year back to Germany. It's just kind of the way it happened. So I could have gotten on an airplane and gone back to Germany. I had considered that. I had considered going to Canada, but nothing ever came of it.
What would you say to someone who gets drafted and believes in like serving their country, or even like enlists in the army, who maybe doesn't understand your viewpoint?
I would talk to anybody who asked me what my viewpoint was. I would explain that it was a personal viewpoint. I would explain it's my personal viewpoint. I would tell them why I made this choice. I would try to convince them that there's other ways, but I wouldn't force my viewpoint on somebody else. It was my personal belief.
Who did you talk about being a CEO with?
I didn't really talk to anybody about a CO with. I was in Germany at the time. I didn't have my family with me. My parents didn't know until after I had registered and wrote them a letter.
So then when you came home, like, who did you tell and what was that process?
I told friends what I had done, people I went to college with, roommates, but I didn't really push it on anybody. I didn't stand out. I didn't force the issue on anybody at all.
Is there anyone you didn't tell that you, like, withheld it from?
I can't think of anybody I purposely did not tell. Now, there were people I didn't tell just because it never came up, but there was nobody I purposely hid it from.
Did you have any veterans in your family?
Yes. My dad was a veteran of World War II. He was in Europe. My brother was drafted, but the day before he got his draft notice, he enlisted in the Navy.
Walk me through telling them you're a CO. Maybe start with your father.
I wrote a letter from Germany back to the United States and explained to my father what I did. I didn't know what their acceptance was going to be. As I just said, my brother was in the Navy. My dad was in World War II. Don't believe he was in a non-combative. He was not in a non-combative unit, but that wasn't a choice he had made. About 3 weeks later, I got a letter back from my parents, and they told me how proud they were of me. They were happy with my decision. And at that point in time, they told me about my uncle, who was a conscientious objector, non-combative conscientious objector in World War II. I knew nothing about that other than he was in Puerto Rico during World War II and had married and had come back to the United States. I didn't know why he was there. But that's the reason he was there, is he was placed in a hospital in Puerto Rico.
So then you're writing that letter. Walk me through, like, what was going through your mind when you were writing the letter? Like, what did the letter say?
I told them that I had made a decision. I decided to be a non-combative conscientious objector. I hope they accept my decision. Here are the reasons for it. And here are my thoughts. And my thoughts are I could not ever shoot anybody. I've never even been hunting. I have, at that point, friends from quite a few places in Europe and from South America that I had met while in Germany. And we were all, like I say, somewhat similar. We're all the same age. We wanted all the same things in life. And I just couldn't do it. I didn't believe in it. I couldn't do it. Like I said, I believe that we did need a military. It was more offensive than defensive than I ever wanted, but I understood that.
So what was it like getting that letter then back saying that they were proud of you?
It was such a relief. I didn't know what, you know, I figured that I would be accepted, but I wasn't sure if I would have a home to come back home to. I figured I would, but there's always that doubt. And the 2 or 3 week time frame plays weird tricks with your mind. It's not like instant you get on Instagram or InstaChat or whatever, Skype or whatever it is nowadays, that you can just do it anywhere in the world. No, that wasn't the case back then. Telephone calls were extremely expensive even.
So then, just a little bit of the technical stuff. So when you came back, like, whatever happened with you being a CO, like, were you ever drafted, that kind of thing?
Really nothing ever happened with it. My draft year, They did still pull the lottery. Every birthday was assigned a number. It was ping pong balls or some way. My number was in the 180s to 190s. I don't remember exactly what it was. I believe my number the year before was drafted. I did go to college. You could get an educational deferment. I was going to go to college whether that was a factor or not. But my birth year, 1953, was the first year that they didn't have a draft. So really nothing ever came of it. I didn't have to prove to anybody this is what I wanted to do, 'cause I was never drafted.
What would you have had to done? What would you have had to do if you had been drafted?
I would have had to prove, I believe I would have had to prove to the military what my beliefs were. I had a couple aces up my sleeve. My uncle being a conscious objector, which I didn't know, but we're all coming from the same family. I had ministers. My minister in the Methodist Church was going to back me up. And my own personal strong belief at that time.
Did you ever talk to your... Once you found out he was a CO, did you ever talk to your uncle about it?
No, he lived in California. We didn't really have much conversations, and I really only saw him two or three times after that.
And then where did you go to college?
I went to college at Western Illinois University.
All right, and then you seemed you were pretty against the war.
Yes.
Did you participate in any protests or anything?
Did not participate in protest. At that point in time, Western Illinois had a very large contingency of military veterans that went to school there. I had little interaction with them. It's not that I tried not to have it, but they were all 4 or 5 years older than us. I was an 18-year-old kid. Yes, I had been in Europe, but I was an 18-year-old kid who didn't know a whole lot. These were 21, 22, 23-year-olds who had been in Vietnam, possibly, or other places. And so we didn't have much interaction, but there was very little protest against the war at Western Illinois. And I'm fairly non-political as is.
Did you ever, even if there wasn't a lot of interaction, would you think it was just the age, or do you think would you even, even today, do you know veterans? Does this ever come up? Do you ever have trouble, like,
I've told some veterans, and yes, there would be some I would definitely disagree with, but there were plenty of conscientious objectors I would have disagreed with also. I was not against the destruction of the United States. I was not against a lot of the the protests that they were putting up. I say they, a lot of the students at the time. I understood we needed a military. Peace, love, and war, or peace, love, and dope, or whatever, yeah. But you got to have a military. You got to have defense. Otherwise, where would we be?
Do you think that you would have maybe participated in any, like, even peaceful protests or anything?
I would have. Given the opportunity, I would have. As long as it was peaceful. As I said, we didn't really have protest at Western Illinois University when I was there. There was no major movement there. Most of the major protests that you saw were the 1967, 1968, 1969, 1970. I was in Germany for 71, 72 and came back late 72. A lot of the protests had been over. We were starting to pull out of Vietnam at the time. So there really wasn't as big a movement at that point in time because we knew we were coming out one way or another.
I'm saying, like, but the protests that did happen that you at least heard about, what was your opinion on those?
Some were very good. Some were done totally correct. Peaceful, get your point across, sit-ins, things of that nature, get arrested for sitting in, for disturbing convoys, things of that nature. I have no problem with that. But there were other protests that got violent, got destructive. Major issues with that. And they're still going on today, for that matter. Not against the war, but other type of destructive protest. And that's not protest, that's riots.
And then with you're against war and everything, what would you say to maybe like, well, first the question, do you know any Vietnamese today?
No, don't know any.
What would you maybe say to like a Vietnamese refugee who maybe has the feeling that like the Americans abandoned them?
I would understand their feelings, but I would also wonder if they had the feeling the Americans abandoned them, why they would be in America too. If they were against America, why would they be here? There's other places in the world to live.
So what are your feelings toward the Vietnamese then, if you have any?
I really don't have any feelings against them at all. The reason I don't think we should have been in Vietnam is that we didn't have the Vietnamese support. We had a regime over there who was corrupted, who just wanted to stay in power. The people of Vietnam, in my feelings, just wanted to keep living. They wanted to keep their life. And this was happening around them, and there were things that happened on both sides, but you hear more about the atrocities that happened from the U.S. military that I could see turning the Vietnam population against America.
If you never were drafted.
No.
If you had been drafted, how do you think your life would be different now?
It was highly unlikely that I would have ever been drafted. The reason I'm saying that is I would have stayed in school. I would have kept my educational deferment. I did get married while I was in school and had a kid, which would have also been deferments. So it's hard to say. If I had been drafted, if I had gone into the military, my guess is I probably would be more political today, more anti-military today.
Was there any other reason that you were so, you really didn't want to go to war? Is there any other reason besides the not wanting to carry a gun?
I thought the Vietnam War was an unjust war. I thought we shouldn't have been there. There was no reason for us to be there. We're killing innocent people. Yes, we were killing combatants on the other side. Our soldiers were drafted. Most of them didn't want to be there. I saw no reason to be there at all.
Where and how did you formulate these strong political opinions?
Basically, in my applications to become an exchange student. And while I was an exchange student, I got the opinions of Europe when I was there. I read European press. I read Newsweek, which is a fairly liberal magazine at the time. And I just saw and came to the conclusion that it was we shouldn't have been there to begin with. The Germans, I felt, were kind of, yeah, why are you there? That I knew. The other exchange students from other countries wanted to know what was going on. They didn't have the full, I don't know if anybody had the full idea of what all the reasons were, but they didn't know and wanted me to explain what I knew. I traveled around Europe while I was there, and the only place I didn't feel comfortable with being an American was in France. One of the reasons I firmly believe in it was that France had left Vietnam and we had come in after them.
So, let's say you mentioned your wife and your child. Tell me a little bit about your family, like how many kids you have.
I have a wife. We've been married 40 years, going on 41 years. We met in college and got married. I have a son, two sons, 39 and 36, give or take, and three grandkids, 19, 16, both live in St. Joe, close to where we live, and then a five-year-old granddaughter.
How do you think your political opinions and your status as a CEO kind of affected you as like a father and maybe like influenced your kids?
We never had guns in the house. We tried hard to keep play guns out of the house. It's amazing what kids can turn into guns, though. Ticker toys, Legos, whatever. They always become guns for some reason. It's just the nature of it. But we always tried to keep guns out of the house also. Yes, we did have a few. There was the Nerf gun or the squirt gun or things like that. But we always, my wife agreed that we always tried to keep this out of the house.
Did your wife have those beliefs before meeting you, or do you think you kind of also affected her?
I feel strongly that I affected her. I feel strongly that I influenced that decision. She never disagreed with me on that issue, so I'm sure she had some feelings also that way. But I feel I was a big, strong part of that.
When, like, did you ever talk about being a CEO in detail with your wife since you met her after registering?
Never really talked to her much about it because it was a non-factor. I wasn't drafted, so it was a non-factor. So I didn't really talk about it. Yes, I had told her what I had done. I had told her about my time in Germany. I had told her about being a CEO. I had told my kids about her also, but didn't really bring it up into the major discussion. They knew what my beliefs were.
Did you have any reaction, notable reaction from your wife or anything when you told her?
Not really, because I'm sure it didn't surprise her when I told her, because just kind of my feelings all along. And so I'm sure when I did tell her, it wouldn't have been a major surprise to her.
You talked about how boys will just turn anything into guns. Were you like that too as a kid? Or were you?
Yes, I was. We had no guns in the house. My dad was a minister's kid. And so he had that belief also. But yes, we had toy guns. We turned things into guns. Yes, I played Army at the time. I played cowboys and Indians. We built forts for Army, things of that nature.
Why do you think boys are so fascinated with kind of guns in the military?
A lot of it's media, I believe. A whole lot of it's media, I believe. And I grew up in the 50s, late 50s, 60s, and it was deemed as glamorous. Yes, all the fathers had been in World War II or Korea, and it was kind of glamorous. It was kind of, yeah, let's follow our father's ways.
Your father was a veteran too, right?
Yes.
But then you say he was also very against guns.
Yes.
Do you think, did he develop that through going to war? Tell me a little about about that?
Never really discussed it with my dad, but I think he had that belief beforehand. As I said, he was a minister's child, and his older brother was a conscientious objector during World War II.
Did he talk much about his service at all?
About the only thing I knew is he drove trucks. I don't think he was ever in combat. I'm almost positive he was never in combat. His primary duty was driving trucks, and when I was in Germany, they came over, my mother and father came over and visited, and he did want to see some of the places that he had been.
And then your sons, do they share your feelings about guns now?
They have no guns in the house. So, yeah, I believe they do feel, I believe they do have that same feeling. That about guns is we do, is my wife and I do.
And it doesn't sound like it, but I'm going to ask anyway. Has your views about war or anything changed since 1972?
Probably become stronger anti-war. I was pretty strong anti-war now, but I see what went on with Iran, Syria, the Middle East, Afghanistan. What's going on? Yes, we need a military. Yes, we need a defense. But going to war in a country to expel a regime and then have the people not be able to govern themselves, it just goes from one extreme to the other extreme. The Middle East now, you've got the religious fanatics fighting each other. Which is becoming more and more prominent. We got out of the Middle East, and there's more destruction going on now than beforehand.
How big of a fact was, or if at all, was religion a factor at all in your choice to be a CO?
Religion was a factor. I grew up in the Methodist Church. It was never really preached to us, but we're all God's children, I felt. I just still do. And it was a factor. Now, can I say what percentage of factor it was or not? I don't know. But it was always in the back of my mind.
What would you say to maybe, like, some of the soldiers that either enlist or go to war because they see it as, like, exciting, or they want the adventure?
I firmly believe a lot of the soldiers do go to war because they see it's exciting or an adventure or things like that. It's glamorized oftentimes in the media. And, you know, I'm glad there are people who do enlist. I'd never want to see a draft again. There are people who have much stronger feelings to serve our country, to protect us, than I ever would. And I'm glad there's people like that. There are fanatics on the outside who just want to go and, you know, shoot, and let's do that. And I wonder about them and a mentality, and I am sorry for those who never have come back. I'm sorry for those who have been injured physically and mentally.
How much do you share this story?
Very little. There are some people it just doesn't come up in conversation, especially today. I did more in college. I do with friends. I don't hide it, it just doesn't come up.
Have you ever felt like any resistance from anyone you brought up your feelings with?
No, I don't. I think if the draft was today, I think there would be more resistance. But back then, 1972, 73, the early 70s, very few people wanted to go to Vietnam. Very few people wanted to enter the armed forces. That's why the draft was there. And so, no, I really never felt any resistance from anybody.
When you were in Germany or before you went over, do you remember seeing any media images coming back from Vietnam?
Oh, sure.
Tell us what you saw and how it influenced you in Tel Cassidy.
There was a lot in the news, and I've always watched the news. Read newspapers, watched the news, the local, the world news, and you saw images. When I was younger and we had just started in Vietnam, there were images of us being the good guys, things of that nature. Us helping us. Yes, there were some war images. As the 60s progressed, they slowly started to move to the other side. We started seeing newscasts of protest. Unfortunately, newscasts of riot protests had turned into riots. You started to see more images of Vietnam, of the bad side of Vietnam, villages being destroyed, the Agent Orange, the mass bombings, and then you started seeing the veterans coming home with injuries, the veterans coming home and being ignored and being told not to wear the uniforms when they came home. I don't think that was fair for them, being told not to wear the uniforms because they were gonna be spat on or yelled at or things like that. I don't think that was fair either. They were over there, many of them, not because of their choice. But I grew up, yes, seeing the images. And that was one of the reasons, too. I just didn't see the reason for destroying a country and the citizens. A couple of the pictures. One was the girl running down the road naked because her clothes had been burned off by napalm and she was burnt and she was running scared. Another one and was the assassination of a Vietnamese spy by the head of Vietnam, and I don't remember the names, or a picture of him just shooting right in the head, and that was shown live on TV. Probably not live. Of the mass bombings of the countryside, yes, there could have been Vietnamese or Viet Cong there, but there are also villages and people there.
Did you you talked about the veterans coming home injured and whatnot. Did you personally know any veterans who came back injured or maybe didn't come back at all?
No, I didn't. I was a jock in high school. All of my friends went to college. I knew on the outskirts some friends who did enlist, but I never talked to them after the fact. We just never met up. It's not that I tried not to, it just never met up.
Talked about seeing all like the destruction in Germany. Can you like describe that a little more in detail about what images you saw?
One of the major images I saw when I first got there to learn about Nuremberg. Nuremberg is a beautiful, beautiful Renaissance city. It dates back to the 9th century or older. It's a castle, walled-in city. Absolutely beautiful. I saw a film taken during World War II of the city and the destruction to it and the bombs that bombed it. And the beautiful city was 90% destroyed. The churches, beautiful Lutheran churches, beautiful Catholic churches, primarily the Lutheran churches, they had taken the stained glass windows and most of their altarpieces and buried them because they knew they were going to get bombed. This way they could save them. They built their churches, their city back stone by stone. There were still places, though, that you can see it had not been rebuilt.
Can you describe one of those places, Nate, that was still kind of destroyed when you were there?
There was a church that had still had three walls standing. The steeple was about a quarter there. No roof. Still quite a bit of rubble. They had just started to rebuild that one. It was off to the side. It wasn't on a main thoroughfare. So that's probably why it was one of the last ones to be rebuilt.
I'm thinking, had you ever thought about registering as a CO before you left for Germany?
My guess, and I don't remember for sure, my guess is probably not.
How did you even know what a CO was?
I had been watching the news. I had been reading the Newsweek over there. I saw that this was a possibility. I saw that with my beliefs, that's what I should do. I knew about them beforehand. Didn't really think much about it until I had gotten over there. Like I say, I was fairly non-political.
Would you still call yourself non-political?
I still call myself fairly non-political.
What do you mean by that? Just kind of explain that to someone who, because you have pretty strong feelings about war.
Yes.
And how are you so non-political with that? Just kind of explain that.
I am not a member of any political party. I've never run for any political office. I have no desire to run for any political office. I have no desire to become a member of a political party. I've never been in any protest. I've never gone to any political rallies to see what people are thinking. Most of the political rallies I see on the news or read about are propaganda anyway. I don't trust politicians. Yes, there are some good ones, but we live in Illinois. What does that tell you about politicians? I've just never felt that my thoughts or feelings should be espoused to others other than on a one-on-one type relationship. I'm not going to force my feelings on anybody.
I'm just wondering, are you registered to vote? Do you vote?
Yes, I'm registered to vote. I vote in just about every election.
And then why don't you trust politicians? Like, when did that start?
Probably Nixon. Watergate, things of that nature. And then the more I educated myself about politicians, they say one thing and it happens some way else. The corruption, the constant campaigning, the constant desire to have money. I feel that they're making decisions to remain in office versus making the right decisions. Examples. Look at the state economically that Illinois is in now. It was easy to dole out all this money everywhere. Yet we have no money. So we've got these major deficits.
And then just Nixon and Watergate was after you registered as CO in the Vietnam War.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, were you more trusting of the government when you were registered as a CO, or were you also untrusting?
I was young, naive. I was probably more trusting.
All right. So we just want to kind of get a more like clear kind of context of your family. So could you tell us a little bit about like your parents and then?
My father was the younger son of a minister. They lived in California. My mom and him met at a college that's no longer exists up in Downers Grove. I forgot the name of the college. He went to work out of college at a YMCA, ran a YMCA, assistant director in Davenport, then a director of a branch of the YMCA in Dallas, Texas. And then he became the director, executive director of the YMCA in Decatur.
What, when did he go to World War II in that timeline?
He went to World War II, it must have been after college. I'm not entirely sure. No, he was not married at that point in time.
And then what did your mother do?
My mother was a housewife, a homekeeper, whatever the correct term is today. I have three brothers. So she ran us around quite a bit also. My dad worked some long hours at the YMCA because it's open. And so she ran us around a lot.
Tell me a little about the three brothers, older, younger, did they serve?
My oldest brother was the one who was in the Navy. I have another older brother. We're basically 2 years apart, the three of us. And then my youngest brother is 6 years younger than me.
So the one that's still older than you, but not the Navy one, did he serve or anything?
No, he didn't serve. His draft number at that time was high enough that he didn't have to worry about it. Never was an issue.
All right. And then tell me a little bit about your family now.
I have a wife. We've been married 41 years soon. Two sons, and three grandkids.
All right. And way back, you mentioned that you were against the draft because it was mostly the uneducated or disproportionately African Americans.
Yes. And I don't want to use the term uneducated. Non-college educated would probably be a better term to use.
Yeah. Okay. So non-college educated or African Americans disproportionately. Did you know that at the time, or is that something you learned?
Oh, definitely knew that at the time. I knew that a long time before I even decided to be a conscientious objector. I knew it was unfair. And the media at that time was pointing these issues out. You'd see stories back from Vietnam. And half the pictures would be the African Americans and half would be white. We're not 50-50. We weren't 50-50 at that point in time of population.
Was it just the media that taught you these things, or was it also, did you notice it?
I noticed it in school. The people I wanted to enter the military were entering it right out of high school. People were getting drafted right out of high school. They knew they were going to be drafted, but they had no desire to go to college.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered or I haven't asked that you want to share?
I do want to say thank you to our veterans. Thank you to the people in the armed forces now. I respect them. I respect most of them for their feelings and their beliefs. Some on either side, I have no respect for at all. I understand we need a military. I wish it wasn't so offensive, more defensive in nature. The vast majority of the wars have been worthless, in my opinion. Religious or ethnic fights. And I just don't understand why the need for it so often. I don't understand why the politicians think it's glamorous. but I still fear for the world and what's going on today. The Middle East, the issues in Ukraine, religious fanatics, things of that nature.
You mentioned that there were some on either side you don't have respect for. Who is it that you don't have respect for?
I don't have any names, but you do have the gung-ho, let's shoot anybody who walks in the military. You also have the other side that anybody in the military is evil and should be gotten rid of also. You have, you know, far right, far left, that I just don't understand. I can't respect them.
All right. I don't think I have any other questions unless Kim has anything, unless you have anything else you want to say.
No, I think I've basically said it. Like I said, I've said more now in the last couple of weeks than I've said probably my entire life about this.